It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Verrett. Several Native American citizens have been wrongfully stopped or detained by federal agents in Minnesota as ICE and Border Patrol continue sweeping the area as part of the Trump administration's crackdown on immigration.
For some tribal members, this moment brings up echoes of history back to the late 1960s when the American Indian Movement was founded as a response to police brutality in Minneapolis.
One of the movement's co-founders and spiritual leaders, Eddie Benton Benet, was from the Lacoutere tribe in Hayward in northwest Wisconsin. Later, we'll hear from one of his granddaughters about how she's carrying forward his legacy.
But first, Wisconsin tribes find themselves in fear of clashing with law enforcement again. Many tribes are monitoring the situation closely and issuing guidance to their communities, including Lac des Flambeaux, St. Croix, Stockbridge, Muncie, Oneida, and Ho-Chunk.
John Greendeer is president of the Ho-Chunk Nation. I talked to him earlier this week. We've had now multiple reports of Native Americans in Minnesota being questioned, stopped, in some cases detained by immigration authorities there, questioning their citizenship status. What do stories like this bring up for you as the leader of a tribal nation in Wisconsin with a large part of your area in western Wisconsin near that Minnesota border?
Yeah, it's disheartening to hear any reports of this. And, you know, it's actually ironic that people are questioning the citizenship of the Aboriginal and Indigenous people of this area. And then even more ironic that the people that are seeking to find answers to someone's identity are wearing masks and not introducing themselves. And so, you know, it's hard to work with that level of irony.
And what are you hearing from members of your tribe and others in your community about their concerns?
They're not concerned. They're scared. You know, I think it's the invocation of fear into a community to have this reckless policy puts people in a sense that, you know, when someone lives like this, they're not going to be living their best life. This is not a safe America the way ICE has presented themselves. So it is concerning for individuals, for families, for households, for communities, and, you know, we are looking for solutions much larger.
Now, we've got the map, the geography of the United States, but we also have tribal nations, ancestral lands. What does it mean to you to see this kind of border enforcement going on these ancestral lands?
You know, we've been here way before ICE and way before colonization. And, you know, we were in a borderless America where trade and commerce took place, where we had peace and war, and we had, you know, survival and thriving. And so to take a look at now, we are driven by the lines. We are driven by policy initiative that is built on complete ideology and philosophical and fundamental differences of how society should look like. This is hard to manage as a person that someone looks to for comfort and support because, you know, this type of districtism and this type of how they've structured themselves has really, really cascaded across Indian country for the Southwest, Northwest tribes. And I do meet with them regularly across the what we call Turtle Island. And, you know, they're suffering that same way, that they are coming into rural country and disrupting this without any agenda whatsoever.
Do you have advice for members of the Ho-Chunk Nation who may be visiting, going to an area where there's active enforcement, just on a practical level? What can you tell people?
Well, one of the things that we try to do is to do our best to remain calm, that we have triple citizenship, that we are members of the state to whom which we live in, members of the United States federal government, and members of an indigenous nation. We don't have to justify who we are to any further extent than what our legal IDs would provide. So making sure that people have legal identification is one thing. And just being calm, and it, you know, being calm doesn't often and always mean compliant. It doesn't mean surrender your rights. It means to know your rights and be calm but be affirming.
Looking at how this enforcement is playing out, we've heard from the federal government everything from, hey, we're doing targeted enforcement, right? We have a name, we're looking at a person, all the way to we are going door to door. Why is it – obviously, a Native American with that triple citizenship you were talking about shouldn't be on anybody's enforcement radar for immigration. Bluntly, why do you think Native Americans have been targeted and detained in some cases?
Well, I think there's a lot of profiling here. I think we match a lot of the phenotype of their target market. And, you know, I think a lot of them have just a lack of knowledge of indigenous culture, communities, and what role in history that we've actually played with the United States of America. And for that, you know, I think they have been just adrenalized by the authority that they've been given. And just to capture a brown person, it doesn't matter if they're Native American or from the islands or black, they are really keeping score on this thing. This is what it comes down to.
You're the president of a tribal organization, right, in the United States. Have you been contacted by ICE or the Border Patrol or Homeland Security saying, hey, how can we work together to make sure we don't, you know, grab your people?
you know what? I that would be the surprise of my life, that they would actually reach out and try to cooperate. First of all, I'm not going to cooperate with ICE. I know exactly what their agenda is. There is no mitigation in their goal to round up as many people of color, poor people, disabled people. This is not about immigration. This is more about ideology. Second of all, we already have this happening in some sense. You know, we have in the state of Wisconsin, well, actually the United States, a number of agencies and counties who have agreed to jump into a contract, these 287G agreements, where they have extended their own local law enforcement to be arms of ICE, to be arms of Homeland Security. They never consulted us even. Even our own local counties to whom which we resided never contacted their communities before they entered into these agreements. These are going to be problematic later on. So the only outreach that I've seen the Department of Homeland Security do is to basically put a carrot on a stick, provide a lot of money, a lot of funding for tribal communities to expand their detention facilities to harbor people who are undocumented for some time until they are hopefully duly tried. But for that, they have not been reaching out at all to keep some sort of sense of harmony.
I understand that tribal members from Minnesota, Wisconsin, and elsewhere have been joining community patrols in Minneapolis and the surrounding area. People have harkened that back to the American Indian movement from six decades ago starting. How do you see this moment connecting to a longer history of Native activism?
It's intrinsic for our people to survive. And it doesn't even matter if you're indigenous or not. To what extent would you protect your home, your children, you know, your community? You can take someone who's absolutely rational and civil and contributing to society every single day, and you threaten their family. You should expect anything from that individual, from that community, from that family. And this is what I hope happens. I hope people really understand. You know, we've been listening to all this country music for decades and decades about how you're going to protect your little home and what, you know, what's going to happen if someone shows up. Now it's happening in front of us. I don't see any one of them. As a matter of fact, you know, this is the most ridiculous turn of events that where people who would have been there to protect the rights of citizens, human beings, you know, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, are silent, completely silent. And this is why I say this has nothing to do with immigration, everything to do with people of color and poor people.
And I think we called you up thinking, hey, we'd talk about how this affects Native Americans, and we have. But I'm hearing a lot of solidarity, not just with fellow tribal members and other tribes in Minnesota, for example, but with immigrants themselves.
Yeah, there's no way to do this by ourselves. We live in a world where we have to grasp hands as American citizens, as United States citizens, and we utilize these histories that we have. We've been here before. Most of these people haven't seen this happen before. The Native Americans, the indigenous peoples across the United States and South America have seen this very thing happen before. We know exactly how this ends, and it doesn't end well for the perpetrators who are infringing on the rights of American citizens.
What do you see as a priority now for organizing within the Ho-Chunk, with other tribal organizations and beyond for the future, for whatever comes next when it comes to immigration enforcement?
I think despite all the differences across American Indian leadership, the tribal leadership has to come together to build a strong and salient and succinct demand of what they expect out of the federal government. No more of this shiny, polished treaty and trust responsibility and co-stewardship and all this BS that, you know, we have to sit here and play the game with. We need solid rules for the federal government when engaging with Indian tribes, Indian communities, Indian individuals. And we need to make sure that the government absolutely follows that. I believe any any type of assault on indigenous people should be a felony, and people should be exposed and should be held accountable just like they would anywhere else for any other crime.
And finally, are there things you'd like to see from state and local governments here in Wisconsin, possibly in cooperation with tribal governments, as part of the response to what we're seeing from the federal government?
I think, and unfortunately, Minnesota has to be an example, but I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned from state and government, local municipal leadership on how to prepare for the incoming of any ICE agents. You know, they are not welcome where they're coming. They are not welcome in Ho-Chunk country at all. I'm not going to make life easy for them to whatever extent I can. But state government as well has to make sure that when they passed that constitution, that was just not a thing that you can set off to the side, that they gave the responsibility to states and tribes to regulate their health, safety, and welfare. And they have been doing that. For better or for worse, the states have built themselves upon that. Now, because of this, omnibus bill that drops $8 billion into ICE, puts 30,000 boots on the ground to, we've had more wars launched against our own country than we have any other country. That we've had the military, we've had the Marines dispatched out to California, the National Guard facing citizens of the United States for simply protecting their rights. And we don't think that there's something wrong with that. The state has to understand that they have a lot of authority. And so the governor, no matter what governor you are, no matter what lever you pull at the polling stations, you have to understand that the protection of the health, safety, and welfare of all of your citizens is the most important thing that you should be thinking about every morning that you wake up.
President Greendeer, thanks again for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
That was John Greendeer, president of the Ho-Chunk Nation. We're talking about the tribal response to immigration enforcement in Minneapolis. Now we turn to Arias Benton-Benet, a designer and jingle-dress dancer. She's a member of the Lacouture Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe and the granddaughter of Eddie Benton-Benet, an Ojibwe activist and co-founder of the American Indian Movement of the 1960s. Recently, she's been sharing videos of her jingle dress on social media for hundreds of thousands of viewers. Arias, thanks for being with us.
Of course, it's a beautiful day.
Well, now, tribes across Wisconsin have issued statements about ICE's presence and activities in Minneapolis, including your tribe, Lacouture. What does that mean to you as you're watching things unfold over in Minnesota?
To me personally, well, I think it's really important that as tribal nations and even just as a tribal individual, we are aware of what's going on and speaking out against the violence that we see today.
As we were just talking about, the American Indian Movement got started in the late 1960s, and your grandfather, Eddie Benton-Benet, was one of the people behind that movement. Can you give us a little bit of background on that family history and his involvement?
Of course. The very first American Indian Movement meeting actually started in the Stillwater State Prison. It was in July of 1968. Clyde Belcourt and my grandfather, they happened to be in prison at the same time. And they met by sheer chance. And as Indigenous men being criminalized for protesting and standing up for their rights, they resonated with each other. And so, firstly, it started as a movement to stand up for your tribal sovereignty, your rights. They were speaking out against police brutality at that time, and they realized what was going on with our people in the city. Urban natives didn't have centers like we do today, like the American Indian Center in Minneapolis, or programs that helped the well-being of Native people. So they were protesting against that, and it started mostly, firstly, as a spiritual movement. My grandpa was a very spiritual person, and he helped us realize that the basis of the American Indian Movement is strong Anishinaabe Native identity. And so that was his vision, is to be strong in who we are as a people. If we're strong, we can speak out against these things that we see, the injustices and the violence that was going on and is still going on today.
What are your own memories of participating in activism with your grandfather?
I grew up going to protests. I remember protesting here in Hayward, Wisconsin. We were protesting during the Idle No More movement. I remember going to Standing Rock. We were protesting the pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline. And I was very young at that time, but that's how I was raised, is to use my voice and for what you believe in. And what we believe in is equality, human rights, all of that.
And does that influence your reaction today to what you see from immigration enforcement going on in Minnesota?
Of course. I mean, what we were protesting with the Dakota Access Pipeline, we were protesting with Idle No More, we were protesting about, you know, ICE out, all of that, they're all interconnected.
I want to give a listen to something you did recently, a video on social media titled Anishinaabekwe Perspectives on ICE. It features you dancing in your jingle dress to the sound of powwow vocals. Let's take a listen. So we're listening to that video on the radio. Can you paint us a picture of what we see?
Of course. So I am dancing in a white jingle dress. This jingle dress represents the healing of the winter time. And for Ojibwe people, it's a time of healing and self-reflection. You know, you kind of slow down in your movements in your daily life. And so that dress, I had made that dress a while back. And it sort of resonated with the meaning, you know, in what I was sharing when I posted that dress was that the healing comes from like ice cracking. And that's significant now, symbolically, you know, to ice being healing. And we see ice being violent, and to put it simply. And so I wanted to share that, you know, the opposites of, you know, our traditions and then opposites of what's going on in Western society and in the main society that we see in our communities.
In your videos, you talk about an indigenous native concept of the meaning of relatives. What does that idea mean to you now?
Relatives. So when we say relatives, we talk about all of our relations. We have relations to each other, me and you. We have relationships to our communities and the earth as well. It's not just human to human. It's human to the earth that gives us life and all of that. And so when I say relatives, I mean all living beings.
Arias, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That was Arias Benton-Benet, a jingle dress dancer from the Lacouture Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe, granddaughter of Eddie Benton-Benet, co-founder and spiritual leader of the American Indian Movement. Earlier, we heard from Ho-Chunk President John Greendeer. Been talking about how tribes in Wisconsin are responding to immigration enforcement surges and stops and apprehensions in some cases of Native Americans in neighboring Minnesota.